Well, this is the BrianMadden.com podcast. We're recording on Wednesday, November 28th. This is Jack Madden, and I am here in the Tech Target studios with, of all people, Brian Madden.
Hello.
So we can do the usual clarification of BrianMadden.com, the site, versus Brian Madden, the person. And there was an interesting milestone just this week, because I realized that it was last week that 10 years ago that BrianMadden.com, the site, was sold by Brian Madden, the person, to Tech Target, the company that employs me and owns Brian Madden, the site.
I don't know why people are confused about that. You know, I tweeted, so 10 years ago we sold it to Tech Target. And like Gabe, you were there, and Gabe and me, and in some ways it feels like the time went by so fast. Like it just, I remember, you know, we're in San Francisco right now. I was living in San Francisco at the time, and like I just moved here. I remember everything like it was yesterday. And then I'm like, so in some ways it seems like it was just so fast. And then other times I was going back and reading other articles from November 2008.
So I saw a few fun ones today. One was about Sunrays, and I guess that was even before before Oracle bought them. The other one was the headline was something like, Microsoft announces this Azure thing. What does it mean to EUC?
Did you read that article?
Yeah.
Was it any
good?
Yeah,
there were some good points in there.
Who wrote that?
So that was you. I have to give you the credit. There were some good points in there. That was one of them. Was like, hey, so you know, even with cloud based applications, like at first it's going to be developers. They're going to have to be making applications for the cloud, and we're still going to have like rich clients when we want offline, or stuff to happen fast on the client, or whatever we have to do to get those users. And maybe if they're apps that live on servers, then we just like give the user a URL to point them to.
Oh man, I was describing VMware Workspace ONE.
So,
by the way, I work for VMware. We should say that, right?
Yeah.
I think this is like the third or fourth podcast I've done with you since leaving BrianMadden.com like 2 years ago. We did a couple kind of when I was floating around doing nothing, and I think we've done a couple at since I've been at VMware.
Yeah, we did the VMworld one and the one like, I don't know, a month before you joined VMware back in that.
Yeah.
So it's November. The end of the year is here before you know it, because, I mean, come on, how much is anybody really working the next couple of weeks anyway? You got the office parties, I'm out this afternoon for my kids' school play. And
I'm working the entire month nonstop. Just let everyone know that. Attention, colleagues. Brian's busy.
And so am I. But I figured there's obviously we could talk about any subject at length for a long time. But I figured, why don't I already published an article, my 2019 predictions for enterprise mobility, desktop virtualization, and EUC. And it seemed a little bit early, but with that disclaimer about things kind of slow down at the end of the year. So this article has been out for like 2 weeks now.
Do you have that article up?
Yeah.
Can we go through it?
Yeah, I have that article up.
Oh, fantastic. Brian judges Jack.
Yeah. So you've been working for VMware, I don't know, a number of months now.
7 months, 3 weeks, and 4 days.
And
but who's counting?
And you've been doing a lot of customer meetings.
135 or something like that.
Do you have to like track that officially?
No, I'll tell you what. I do actually have a spreadsheet, and I track every customer meeting I have, every podcast I do, every blog post, every presentation, both internal and external, every white paper, every video.
And then Sean checks it off every week.
Well, so here's the thing. So I work for Sean Bass. You know, Sean Bass is the CTO for EUC, and I work for him and his group. Our group is all pretty autonomous. Like, we're varied. You know, there's different people in the CTO office, and we're all doing our own things. And for the most part, I don't have much supervision, I'll say. I spend a lot of time on airplanes talking to customers and, you know, presenting at VMUGs and shows like that. But I feel like at some point, it's like that movie Office Space. Like, someone's going to be like, what would you say you do here? So from the first day, I don't know why I had the wherewithal to do this, but from my very first day, I created the spreadsheet and there's different tabs for each like activity, and then it rolls up per month and all that kind of thing. So I can show specifically like I've done this many meetings, this many whatever, and I can break them down by quarter or by half, whatever. So I just kind of track that because I feel like at some point someone's going to ask. But I do know specifically, and I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's like 130 customer meetings around the world. You know what, by the way? Here's a dirty little secret. All the customers are the same. Really? Like, look at every, you know, I know we're supposed to like talk about, oh, you're a special customer and you're like, no, you're a unique flower and, you know, we want to work with your needs. Man, if you got 10,000 users or more, it's the same. Like, let me guess. You're halfway through your Windows 7 to Windows 10 migration. You're going to Windows 10 like the old way, quote unquote, you know, with SCCM and like domain joined and like imaging, because you want to get to modern management and all this cloud based stuff. But, you know, you got that January 2020 deadline looming. You're using like AirWatch or Mobile Iron or whatever for iOS and Android. You're using like Citrix for some VDI and some you know, Zenap. You're not managing Macs, or maybe you get some Jamf. It's like kind of a different group and you don't really know. You're using like Ping or Okta or something like that for some, you know, like identity. You're thinking about, you know, Azure Active Directory or ADFS, but it's kind of really on-prem domains. You're using group policy. Seriously, dude, every single customer is like in the identical same boat right now.
How about wow. So there's got to be something really, there are some grand conclusions that I'm sure that we could draw, or maybe you've already drawn that. Do you ever meet with any mid-size or smaller customers?
Almost never. And I think that's just, it's, yeah, almost never. And I think it's just because, I don't know why not, actually.
Like, one of the things that I want to meet is, like, the companies of the world that say, like, they're not on, you know, they're not on an IDaaS yet. Okta, Ping, VMware Identity Manager, or maybe even they're not even doing EMM or anything, which, you know, one of my things, I guess we'll come to it when we get to it. We should just jump into it, but is like, okay, which of these EUC technologies that we talk about a lot can have value for your 3,000 or 1,000 or 500 person company, and which some of them I think could have a ton of value, especially like an IDaaS for you know, I don't know, any company like bigger than one person.
I mean, really, right? Like,
if you start a new company today, I start my new company, I like click buy new Office 365 license or buy new G Suite license, and then federate everything out from there.
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, even like this IDaaS stuff, every company in the world, especially all the new, like, new or old, you've got all these, I mean, God, there's so many web apps and cloud apps and all this kind of stuff. And it was crazy, man. TechTarget didn't do this in my day. I'm going to protect, you don't have to mention anything about today. Maybe, I'm sure it's all different. It's been more than 2 years since I worked here, but like I had a separate logon for Concur and I had a separate logon. Like every system we used was all separate logons, all with their own password rules and their own like password expiration policies and all this kind of stuff. So moving into like a company that does it right, where you just have like my regular domain login and it just like kind of works everywhere. That's pretty sweet. And I, like, how do companies not have this? And forget VMware for a second, like just anyone, how do companies not have this?
So I'll say that we have more cloud apps federated than we used to, but the number is definitely less than all. And there are still a lot of crazy apps out there that don't support federation. Like the biggest and probably like for a lot of, the one that comes to mind is Apple Business Manager, the portal that you use for VPP and device enrollment. And
how's that? Like, I feel like in 2018, you have to work harder to not support it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, in that case, like, I don't know, it's Apple, so
yeah, yeah.
Let's get to my list, because this is the first item on my prediction is maybe I should just read it. So in 2019. even more customers and vendors will get on board with identity management, conditional access, and, quote, zero trust. Plenty of people still haven't implemented modern SSO / Federation or MFA yet, so there are going to be a lot of those projects happening in 2019. Those have already done those projects will move on to things like connecting on-premises apps to cloud-based identity providers. Identity will continue to be integrated with security and endpoint management products, enabling conditional access, quote, zero trust, and BeyondCorp concepts. More important, hopefully the industry will agree on a single term for all of these concepts.
All right, man. So first of all, the caveat is everyone I'm talking to is like big customers, and they're somewhat like they're at least kind of VMware friendly because like they're talking to me. So it's not a scientific sample. That said, though, everyone I'm talking to has some kind of IDaaS or something like that.
So the next step from there is and at the very simplest layer of conditional access that probably a lot of people might think of is we want to do like logins for managed devices only. So we have to have the wiring there to check to see that it's coming from a managed device. And then we can get more complicated from there, like having a system to detect impossible travel or suddenly you're logging in from a location that you've never been in before. And
people are very, very interested in the conditional access. That's a big conversation topic that we have. I tell people like, look, access has always been based on conditions. Like previously it's two conditions. Do you have, can you come up with a username and a password that manages that username? So like that's already two conditions. Then the third condition, now is my multi-factor and these things. But now getting into, right, like you're saying, like, oh, this device is like geolocated and geolocked. So I'm tying conditions to, is it not jailbroken? Is it in this location? Location services enabled? Is it within this boundary? Or different conditions on, is this installed or is this not installed? All that kind of stuff. So conditional access. But a lot of people, I'll tell you, a lot of people only think of conditional access today for web apps. And I think people are having their eyes open. Like, no, like this conditional access can be done for all applications on all devices. It's not just like your web apps or Office 365 applications. So that's a big conversation. I think a lot of people are like pretty excited about that. And I agree that that's going to be a big thing in 2019.
How about the other part of that is taking apps that were VPN access only and that always would have, for the internal apps that in the past would have always been like the third, you said the first condition is a username and a password. And then the third condition is like being physically inside of the building and connecting to that network or being on a VPN. What about like, I don't know the best term, like killing traditional VPNs as part of that.
Oh, yeah. And that ties to your Zero Trust and BeyondCorp and all this kind of stuff. And dude, man, you remember that I've been writing about this for a long, long time. Like, do you remember how I said like all corporate Wi-Fi should just be like open Wi-Fi? Like, I got to find out. That article was a long time ago. Like, thank you, Google and Gartner, for catching up to my vision.
Yeah. That's got to be... That's got to be and so many things from our we've had this conversation offline before about if you go back to probably it was Bry Forum 2011 Europe, the presentation was what it was like the real consumerization of IT.
And
that's the one that I want to make like a pop-up video version of that presentation, because every single issue that we talked about then, like,
we can solve now.
Dude,
that's a great idea.
And maybe it was from even earlier, like 2010 or 2009, there was a Future of the Enterprise Desktop presentation. And
first of all, when you write probably what 200 blog posts a year for 15 years, and when you have 750 Bry Forum presentations over 20 Bry Forums, and when you have
I'm going to take like 36 envelopes and write the name of each NFL football team on them and like write, you know, this is going to be the winner of the Super Bowl.
Oh, right. And seal them all and then mail them to yourself. And
then the other ones are, yeah. You know, conveniently going to go in the trash.
What is that? Like a blind squirrel finds a nut, or a broken clock is right twice a day, or whatever that is. You know, like that's yeah. You know, we've read enough. Yeah. We can selectively dig through that. But the whole Zero Trust and BeyondCorp thing, I mean, people are starting to recognize that, and frankly, and,
so it seems to me like the question is, like, what do you do to get there? And it seems like the first step is like you have to be using a modern IDaaS, and then the next step is probably getting it talking to your EMM. And I'm talking like, obviously, if your IDaaS and your EMM are coming from the same vendor, that's easier.
Yeah, and EMM in this case, I mean, I would call it UEM, like your Unified Endpoint Management, because it's not just mobile, it's also like Windows and Mac and everything.
I'm just being lazy and calling it EMM.
But I mean, the thing is, it is because, you know, look, the very first thing is you have to establish, you got to get people to believe, like, look, I can't trust a device just because it's like, quote, on my network or quote, in my domain, right? So like, I can't, just because it's my device, I can't trust a device just because the device says, oh, it's fine. And as we know also, I can't automatically not trust a device just because it's like out in the world somewhere, because it might be trustworthy. So
yeah,
so the fundamental thing is we have to change it so we're not basing trust on like the device domain join or where it is or whatever. We have to start looking at the device itself and saying, you know, what characteristics do I care about on this device and can I trust it? And what's interesting is both Windows and Mac, on the mobility side, it's been possible to do this for a lot longer, but now both Windows and Mac have like these, you know, with the UEFI sort of firmware now, and you can have like secure boot and know if you got trusted boot or secure boot, and the Windows file protection or system information protection on Mac can verify that like the files are right, and you know that we've got like the security chips built in these things to understand. So now we really can start to say, I don't care who you say you are or what you say about, like I can go in and like independently validate the things that I care about, and then if those conditions are met, I let you through. And by the way, maybe it's a sliding scale. It's not all or nothing. So maybe it's like, if I totally trust you, you can run an app locally. If I kind of don't trust you, maybe I still give you like access to a remote VDI app or a web app only or something like that, you know? So it's just, but it's a mindset shift. Like the technology to do that is there. It's just a mindset shift.
And the cool stuff are the next steps, you know, going to, you know, as the trust evaluation becomes much more continuous, and then we look into how do we, like, if suddenly a negative signal comes in, like maybe how do we kill somebody's session in an app?
Yeah, exactly. And if what is that? If it's a web app, that's easy to kind of like pull the plug. But if it's a local running app, you know, are you like,
you're like
copying
device
and pasting. It's like eating the back of the clipboard. You know, as it's yeah. Like no.
Okay, so here's the thing. To me, there's a lot of stuff that makes sense to me because I joined the world and you and Gabe said, you know, I was hired to be desktop virtualization blogger number 3, and then it was this whole EMM stuff and BYOD, and so there's a lot of stuff that
you were hazed. We gave you mobile because we were old and didn't want to deal with it.
But as a result, like I grew up totally thinking like, okay, yes, like sandbox operating systems, being able to manage a device anywhere in real time. And so one of my points is like, this is all like native to me in my worldview as a blogger. But the other one is that so as I was going along, if you had asked me like, what's a big deal, like, okay, it's mobile, it's that we can do anything that we want with mobile, it's identity. Now this like this zero trust stuff, I don't know, I think this is like the biggest thing to happen to EUC since mobile.
I agree. And it's you know, we're seeing a fundamental shift in the industry because, like I said, the ways that we established trust in the past are are ending. Like Microsoft themselves, you know, going to like domain joins are going away, you know. And it's funny because, you know, when Azure Active Directory first came out, it didn't have domain joins, and people are like, oh, it's like typical Microsoft V1. I'm not going to use it until it has a domain join. And Microsoft's like, no, it's the future. You don't need domain joins. It's modern. And people are like, yeah, I'm going to wait for domain joins. They're like, no, seriously, we don't need domain joins anymore. They're like, I'm going to wait for domain joins. And they added domain joins later. Now, granted, sure, there's some applications that need, like, they use domain-based authentication and, you know, like, things like that. But basically, like, it's Microsoft themselves is pushing the model forward of domain-based establishment of trust and, like, your directory-based management and GPL, all that kind of stuff.
See, we can just talk about how Windows RT was just so far ahead of its time.
Yeah. Right. I mean, look, Windows RT, we didn't like it. It didn't have any apps. I mean, really, you know?
Yeah.
As a concept, it was fine. I mean, modern management, I mean, it's funny because modern management is getting all the love right now. And the joke is, you know, there's a whole, like, Microsoft versions of 3. Like, you can use a Microsoft product once it gets to V3. And remember, modern management actually came out in Windows 8.
.1.
Oh, is 8.1? Oh, I've been telling a lot of people a wrong story, because I had this whole story worked out where I said when modern management came out in Windows 8, no one knew about it because no one used Windows 8. Modern management V2 came out in Windows 8.1. Modern management V3 came out in Windows 10, and now that's the one that's actually usable. But apparently, I got to change my tune to be like V2 came out in, like, you know, 1609.
we'll have to see what was there in. I don't 100% remember what was in, like, RT, Windows RT, which tracked to Windows 8
We can call that V1.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I'm technically correct.
So, okay, so I have a whole rest of an article here. So some of these...
it's going to be a 7-hour podcast.
Yeah. Okay, so obviously 2019, crunch time for Windows 10 migrations, you know, end of life is January 14th, 2020. And it was just in October that Microsoft said that the enterprise had ticked over 50% adoption. So,
like, that seems curve, right, based on...
Yeah, curve.
That seems right to me.
Yeah, yeah. So everyone doing it the traditional way, the one thing is, like, even if you're doing it managing the traditional way and ignoring modern management, the question is still, how often do you do your updates? Now you can have 30 months of support if you want.
Right, which is still 24 months. You just wait 6 months before deploying the update because you want, like, file shares to work, for example.
Yeah, yeah. If you could roughly guess of all these customers that are halfway through their Windows 10 migrations, what they are doing for their servicing. Is anybody doing updates every 6 months?
No. I mean, it's, you know, the problem is organizations of any scale can't, like, their traditional methods for deploying and managing Windows take longer than 6 months. So it's like that whole joke of painting the Golden Gate Bridge, except the bridge is rusting faster than you can paint it.
And you need it. Well, and so this is where was it at VMworld where Login won an award for their Login AT application testing that uses like computer vision to look for signs of crashing. And then you guys at VMware were talking about the application compatibility testing stuff, and now Microsoft is like, we'll fix your apps for you.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't think that's the issue, though, honestly. And, like, Tim Mangan has said this, and I believe whatever he says about this topic, like, where he basically said that, oh my gosh, it's funny. I look up over your shoulder and I see tiny Tim Mangan and the bobblehead in the back wall there. Hey, buddy. Tim's agreeing with me. Let the record show. Can you hear that? Tim said the application compatibility changes don't change much between the different channels, or between the 6 month releases of Windows. So he says he doesn't feel that it's necessary to, like, retest all your applications on the semi-annual channel. The problem is, again, if you're using, like, traditional kind of, like, PC lifecycle management for managing machines. So I'm talking about, you know, NSTCM plus Active Directory plus Group Policy. You know, like, are you pushing a full OS out? Are you building an image? Because imaging, I mean, imaging Windows is going away. Like, that's I don't know if you have that on your list as a trend for next year.
I guess it's just assumed in, I have a Windows management from the cloud or modern management section.
Yeah, we can let that slide. If you can give me saying that Windows 10 modern management is actually V3, then I'll give you that one. But I mean, I think it's, but people aren't ready for that. Like, people, no one can, they can't handle that. So, and it's now we're image, like, people are trying to re-image things. And I think the concern right now is just getting off of Windows 7. Most people are using this, the 6 month channel. And because I think Microsoft actually sort of came out and said the long-term support build is, or long-term support channel now, I guess it's called, is supposed to be like for kiosks and these, not really supposed to be for regular interactive desktops. And so I think everyone's like, I just got to get off Windows 7. I'm just going to keep on doing what I'm doing. And then let's figure out what to do next. But generally speaking, like you said, it's the old way. It's like we built there's a master image. We push it out. We SCCM update it. We use like our own, you know, MDT or like Windows, you know, the software update servers and all this kind of stuff. And we're just kind of doing it in SCCM and all that. I think people are just doing it the way they've been doing it. Just get there. And then I have one customer.
But struggling with the updates.
One customer wants to go to Windows 10. They want to go to Windows 10 and do it right from the beginning. So they're actually deploying Windows 8.1 right now.
We'll just leave that one aside for now. Next on the list, after years of pushing Office 365, now the crew in Redmond is pushing Microsoft 365, which, as we know, comprises Office, Windows 10, Intune, Azure AD, and all that stuff. So this is basically my only thing for 2019 is just like all your like lots of talking points and marketing materials, just do like a find and replace for Office 365 to M365.
Yeah. And I think that the part of the reason they're doing that is because Office 365 has been so successful, they're just running out of things to sell.
We don't have Office 365 yet.
Well, hey, you hear that? Somewhere an alarm bell is going off, and there's a mic. Oh, the Microsoft rep just stepped in the door right there. You know, but it's yeah, you know, and it's all bundled together, which kind of makes our lives difficult because customers are like, oh, why should we pay for Workspace ONE? Because EMS is in there, right? I think also.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
An Intune.
So you have lots of AirWatch.
Like Intune is free. And, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Why should we pay for that? Intune is free. I'm like, well,
yeah.
Like Linux is free.
Well,
why do you pay for Windows at all?
We'll save that conversation for another time.
Well, what I was going to say, though, generally speaking, though, is that I think this is good because the model, I tell people this, you know, like it's the same playbook that Citrix had for 25 years. Microsoft makes the baseline functionality and Citrix enhances it. And I think the same thing is true with the modern management capabilities and with, you know, Intune. Microsoft provides that base level functionality. Companies like VMware enhance it. So if companies, you know, if more large companies move to where they're doing, they're getting kind of everything, that's great. That sets a conversation about, okay, we're changing the way we're doing things. And I think when companies change the way they're doing things, now it introduces the opportunity to talk about modern management and Workspace ONE and all this kind of stuff that where it maybe wasn't there before.
Yeah.
Now that said, I'm not seeing Microsoft's 365 in the enterprise at least. So I don't know if it just hasn't hit yet or it's not. But like no one's talking about that. Everyone's talking about Office 365 and, you know, its capabilities and everything. And there's a lot of talk about Intune, but the Microsoft 365 bundle, I've heard that like never at the enterprise level.
I mean, maybe that'll hit more as it comes time for people's subscription renewals.
Yeah, yeah. And again, gotta get Windows 10 out.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't talk about anything else.
This is a 2020 problem.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, write that down for next November's article.
Yeah, like these are 2020 problems.
Yeah.
So on that regard, there are also plenty of people that are assuming that okay, you know, maybe it's Intune for below whatever number you think is appropriate and. You know, and Workspace ONE for above a certain number.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine You know, while VMware would like to see Workspace ONE times every single customer on the planet, you know, even a small customer, I think, could use Intune. I mean, if I have like 15, 20 users, I mean, heck, our brother-in-law has that indoor golf place in Manhattan, and he's expanding. He's got four simulator bays. He's adding three more. Like, I want to use Intune for that, for seven computers, because it's just like, oh, it's all via the cloud. It's just like click and done, and yeah.
So I think we're still going to see people using the term workspaces all through 2019. It's kind of like along with talk about advanced security policy engines under names like intelligence and analytics. I'm of two minds of this. Sometimes I'm like, yeah, like workspace is the perfect term for what we're doing in EUC. But then on the other hand, it's like, this feels just like way too like marketing and
I mean,
buzzy.
Okay, call
and
something else. Call whatever you want.
Yeah. I don't know.
What's your answer?
It's like I was never entirely comfortable when people talked like dual persona, EMM, and
I mean, it's, you know, whatever it is, we're combining device management for all device types, all platforms, regardless of whether they're owned by the company or the end user. We're combining all that with application management. Again, native platform applications, web applications, combine that with identity, combining that with like app catalogs, combining that with, dare I say it, intelligence and analytics.
And that's what a workspace is.
That's,
it's just
call it EUC. Like, yeah, it's EUC. It should. I mean, it's a dumb name, but I think I told you this in the last podcast. Like, I'm really amazed at how many customers I'm meeting with who are using these words on their own. Like, they're saying, like, I'm meeting with them, we're going to talk about like our strategy and vision. We're going to sit down and they kind of outline what they're working on. They're like, well, we're doing a digital transformation or workspace 2.0 or desktop 2.0 or like next gen desktop. Like, they're using terms like this.
Oh, wow.
I didn't tell them.
Granted, if they're meeting with you, they're probably, you know, the more,
like enlightened,
they're enlightened,
or
I was saying, bought into the marketing, or
they love Citrix so much, and then they're like, wait, Brian's at VMware, what the hell? Yeah, we want to talk to him and find out what's happening inside, is what's going on. But it's either that, like, yeah, they're either, it's kind of funny, everyone I meet with either loves VMware or hates VMware. But either way, they're taking them on meeting, so that's cool.
So next thing. So, and I have to qualify this with something that I didn't mention in the article, but I wrote, if there will ever be a year of DAS, 2019 will be it. And by year of DAS, I mean, not that everyone is doing it, just that like everyone is talking about it nonstop. I mean,
we wrote our DAS book in 2014. I can absolutely positively 100% tell you that 2014 was not the year of DAS.
So 2018 was a big deal with lots of vendor activity, and to me the most interesting thing about 2018 was anecdotally all the stories I heard about use cases, especially around graphics oriented use cases. So many anecdotes about people like, yeah, this, you know, studio is using DAS instead of buying expensive workstations. And that just makes so much sense. I had like somebody asked me like about the future of workstations, and I'm like, like, so you want to like buy this? You want to buy something for $5,000 when you can, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, okay. So first of all, we should back up and qualify DAS, because people ask me this a lot, and I say that I think the definition of DAS has been broadened, where now I would include like the traditional DAS. We're talking about fully managed, hosted. You don't really know what's running or where it's running. But I think most, to me, I put cloud-based desktops, cloud-based VDI in there. So like in the VMware world of things, like Horizon on Azure, Horizon Cloud on Azure, you know, Horizon 7 on VMware, Cloud on AWS, like those kinds of things. Even though those aren't like the quote-unquote DAS we were talking about in that 2014 book, that's, and yeah, there is a VMware hosted DAS also, but like the having Horizon run on Azure and AWS, like that's what the hype is about, and that's what people are because I mean obviously people are already all in on AWS or Azure anyway, like
yeah,
put the desktop by the data, like we always said.
Yeah, and I was here using it here, also to mean any form of Windows desktop.
But it's really popular. If everyone's talking about it, I should say, like, I think almost every customer, if a customer is sort of like bought into the cloud, which most of them have now, and I think Office 365 did a lot of encouraging people to start, well, shit, I guess Office is in the cloud, I might as well do everything else now.
Well, this is where interesting questions come up, like to the use cases for virtual desktops. I mean, do we get to a point where, because it was always VDI is so complicated that you better have a good reason to do it. Do we get to the point where like managing desktops is so complicated, you better have a good reason to not have them in a data center? Are we at that point yet?
I don't think we're there yet.
And if your reason is just like, hey, I need a normal laptop because I'm a normal person, then that's like, you know, a lot of the users in your company, that's fine.
What is we can invent a phrase here, like local compute normality or something like that. Local normality. I don't know. MIPS.
Because I still get I was talking to I was talking to one of the partners for Windows Virtual Desktop, and I'm going to be writing about this conversation soon. But you know, they mentioned, like, we were at Ignite, and when they announced Windows Virtual Desktop, and there were still like people, there's still a whole world of people out there that like have maybe barely ever even heard of VDI before, and they see this WVD announcement that this is like by far the most Microsoft has ever evangelized virtual desktops to the world, and they're like, oh hey, what's this, like putting the desktop in the cloud? Yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah, dun dun dun.
So
card, call me in 6 months.
what happens this time around?
As the cloud becomes more popular, there's also like this parallel track of people talking about like edge computing.
I almost picture like you can have a diagram where it's like stuff is getting shoved up into the cloud, and the edge is what like gets like pushed out the other side.
Do you
of
ever
the
make
diagram.
Cheese like paneer? Yeah, and
which don't get me wrong, like I think edge compute, like when at VMworld, when was that Ray O'Farrell was talking like about the ESX in a like data center.
On ARM.
Yeah, and he's like, by the way, it's on ARM. It's like record scratch. Like that's like not at all in the EUC area, but I'll tell you what, that sounds really cool.
Like the thing is, all this conversation about cloud versus edge and all sort of thing is going back to, and frankly, you know, the whole conversation about VDI in general versus local execution and all that kind of stuff. The direction is like the right model for the right scenario. So, you know, like the edge, running stuff locally makes sense sometimes. Running stuff centrally makes sense sometimes. There's pros and cons and trade-offs. And the cloud and these like cloud management systems and these platforms like Workspace ONE and all these things are just reducing the friction of people to be able to move. I don't want to call it workloads in this case. If it's Windows, even move like where specific applications are executing and depending on the needs, which could be based on the application, the user, the device, where they are, what time it is, what they're trying to do. There's a million different things. And so reducing the friction, they talk about like the fungible, like desktop, like that's a real key. So I think the conversation of like, will the cloud ever replace the local computing is like kind of the wrong question to ask. Cause that's like, it's like, well, no one's saying that. Like it should be more like, I don't know, when SUVs came out and it's like, well, SUVs replace cars. Like, yeah, maybe a lot of people will use SUVs, but cars still have a, make sense in some cases. And, I don't know, like it's just,
and at the same time, as I have that thought of look at how much easier VDI in the cloud is. Also, that in that fungibility or whatever, that modern management makes that easier
too. I was just going to say that, exactly. And I think I wrote some blog posts about that on LinkedIn a couple, like 6 months ago, where remember the ability to manage a desktop if we have modern management. And not just modern, like, yes, modern management can change a bunch of things and you don't have to deal with, like, you know, your SCCM and group policies and domain controllers and all this kind of stuff. But the world's getting, like, things are better now in the world, and like in general, yeah, everything. And now we've got, and VMware is doing this and Microsoft is doing this, you know, this like desired state configuration management and the common vulnerabilities and exploit feed integration and automatic tracking of applications that crash and auto patching and auto restoring of applications. And we're not imaging anymore. We're using PPKG XML files to the vendor and they're coming down. You know what I mean? So like,
yeah, yeah. Like, and you know, maybe MSIX makes it easier to, yeah, to do, yeah, that. And by the way, since VDI is so much easier, that we almost, we can kind of, these are some of the conversations that we had years ago, that maybe the endpoint is modern managed in a more modern way. But also it is easy. Like if you do have a reason to do a remote app that's like it's so crazy that you don't want on the endpoint, or it just needs a workstation and class horsepower, or really needs to be that close to the data, like just do it.
Yeah, and it's integrated with the endpoint, who cares? And then we can unify the management, because to me that's the big thing. Like it's not about VDI versus modern management, it's about Windows. And modern management is a way to manage Windows. VDI is a way to deliver Windows. So it's like it's VDI versus laptops versus desktops.
Well, and they've been putting the AirWatch agent in, like, in Horizon desktops for a while now.
It only was officially supported like a few months ago, but it is now. Yeah, yeah.
I remember,
like,
Gabe and I talked about that probably like a year ago with them. But
yeah, you could always do it. It's just that in the old days, it didn't actually know it was running in a VM. And so there's some things it might want to be a little bit more sensitive about, like let's not all update at the same time, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
But now it's officially supported. It's cool. And we're getting, it's not out yet, but we're getting to where we can do it on RDSH, you know, sessions, yeah, as well. And for non-persistent VDI as well. So the idea is that, you know, because that agent does a lot of stuff, the Workspace ONE agent does, you know, not just like pushing out patches, but that's doing all the, you know, like reporting of what the state is and like what's running, what changes,
compliance,
and everything that can be run then on the intelligence cloud to like figure out if it's changed or secure or whatever.
And so if you're doing your like security, you're doing your industry security baseline. It's the same.
Yeah, like
same,
I want this
across
baseline. It's, but this window should be this way, and it should be everywhere. So that's what's cool. So my point is that so modern management and the capabilities you get with things like Workspace ONE to manage Windows, you know, 10, those are great, and you want that regardless of whether it's VDI or RDSH or physical or laptop or desktop or whatever. So I don't think we're going to necessarily go to this world that's kind of draconian, like we move from desktop to VDI, or now like this whole like VDI year VDI thing. This is today. Like, so Johan von Amersfoort tweeted, like, he's missed, he's the bearded VDI junkie, and he has like the car, the t-shirts with like the Back to the Future car, like about the year VDI, and he set up a website that was like, you know, the year VDI, and was just talking about, this is year VDI, like 2019 is gonna be the year VDI. I'm like, no dude. And I think I tweeted, I registered a domain, I forget what it is right now, like 2019 is not the year of VDI.com or something like that. Or is 2019 the year of VDI? And it just says like, no, I haven't set it up yet, but I just registered on the airplane. Cause I think of it, Johan's, love him. And we were texting each other back and forth as like, we're like doing this stuff on Twitter, you know? So like, it's cool. But I'm like, no, I don't want any year to be the year of VDI, because that's like, is this the year of the laptop? It's like, I don't know. No, I mean, it shouldn't be. I don't know. Just do what you need to do. It's VDI, not VDI. Who cares?
Still not the year of two-in-ones.
Based on your review yesterday, I guess, right?
Yeah. Well, another part of this conversation is like the RDSH versus VDI conversation is worth having again. And it has evolved because we also have multi-user Windows 10, and Microsoft is withholding some desktop features from RDSH 2019. And my article, I don't know if you saw this when I read it, but I said, in a related prediction, after saying, quote, this is the last time I'm going to talk about RDSH versus VDI, unquote, several times over the years, Brian Madden, the person, will technically be correct if and when he presents a session called RDSH versus multi-user Windows 10 versus VDI.
Oh my God, dude. You got my VMworld 2019. That's it. Oh my God.
Is that your session?
It is now. Which, knowing the way VM works, I probably have to get like my session submission in this week for next August.
Well, there's your title.
That's fantastic, dude. So Windows 10 multi-user is like a wild card. We can put that aside for a second. I will say this is that, and I think I've written about this before. We talked about this. I'm really surprised. Once I joined VMware and started talking to a lot of customers, tons of people are doing VDI. And I think the cost of VDI has
with client OSs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like classic good old fashioned VDI.
Persistent.
There's a lot of persistent out there. There's a lot of non-persistent too.
Because we also have to talk about persistent versus non-persistent.
Right. So let's pause that for a second. But it's bottom line is you know, VDI is not the costs have come down so much. It's still a little bit more expensive than RDSH, but it's like within probably 10, 15, 20%, generally speaking. And we've talked before about the benefits of VDI. I shudder as I'm saying this, but like, it's a client OS. I can run the same software. I can run with the same Workspace ONE agent. I can run the same, you know, patch cycles. My users can be admins if they want. It's everything's the same. The teams who support the applications don't need to have different ways of doing it. And man, like the stupid RDSH, like there's always some stupid security vulnerability coming out like every few months about.
Well, and like if you do want to go to server 2019, it's like, okay, well, weird office
you can't
restrictions.
Use office, right, yeah.
Can't use Edge, I guess, if you.
Well, and I
need that.
Now, and I'll tell you flat out. And I don't know if this is. Did I write this before I joined VMware? Maybe on a BrianBadden.com article? Like, you know, RDSH is not long for this world. Like, it's Microsoft wants to get the GUI off a server.
Yeah. And that was the article that you wrote before. Like clearly all signs are pushing towards, I mean, Microsoft is clearly doing everything that it possibly can to push people towards WVD especially. Yeah.
And what's nice is that now assuming the WVD comes out in platforms besides Azure, so who knows about that, but what is nice is Win10 multi-user versus Win10. You just gave me the look. My younger brother, Jack Madden, just right now gave me a look that says, man, that is the most ignorant thing that you've ever said. I'm like, oh, maybe Microsoft will get better. Yeah. Nah, they'll do it.
Did you see Claudio's tweet, by the way, about he was so optimistic.
Really?
Yeah.
Claudio Rodriguez?
Yeah.
At CROD, that Claudio?
That Claudio.
Wow. I know I didn't see it, but...
I was going to put it in an article that will probably be out by the time that I'm writing this podcast.
This is the whole article. Claudio Rodriguez is optimistic.
Well, it's basically like we're wondering what Microsoft is. I mean, Microsoft, their initial response is like WVD is Azure only, multi-user is Windows 10 is WVD only. And then Microsoft acquires FS Logix, and everyone's like, ooh, I hope they let us keep on using FS Logix wherever we want to as UPD 2.0. And like just looking at, so Mary Jo Foley wrote this article about how like the performance stock awards for Microsoft executives are calculated, and like 67% of it, the metrics is like cloud. And I'm not saying it's just like an overarching trend to keep in mind that their moves are generally
antagonistic and monopolistic. I'm not saying this as a VMware employee. I'm saying that I'm reading your words.
I don't know, but also like down at the people that are making, I just don't know how all of these decisions are made. And we can see that like Azure is how decisions are made at the top level. And, you know, it could be very well be free that people at other levels would be free to make a decision, like to make FS Logix into UPD 2.0 and make it, you know, anywhere you have a Windows license, you can use it or something like that. But
I'm feeling
less optimistic than Claudio, which is something that, like, I don't know. I was always a young, optimistic guy.
Nah, dude, you're getting up there. You've been blogging now full time for what, like 7 years? 6 years? A little while, right?
Yeah. I'm sure I sailed past 1,000 articles.
Jeez.
A long time ago.
Yeah. No, you're crusty.
So when you write 1,000 articles about something.
Yeah. Nah, it's, you know, but back to the original question, I think the, I do wonder if Windows 10 multi-user is going to, like, is it going to matter? Because these virtualization platforms are getting better and better, especially, you know, you've got technology, like, I'm more familiar with VMware's platform, like, there's, like, instant clones, which, you know, you have basically, like, one running VM and just, like, do, like, forks of it. So you have, like, your gold, it's not a gold master disk image, it's a gold master VM. And it's, like, bing, 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 we can make as many as we want, but you can destroy them on log off. What's the difference between that and, like, Windows 10 multi-user, really? Especially if you can do, like, if there's technologies to, you know, dedupe the memories and, you know, like, processor sharing. All the technologies of virtualization to make hypervisors good.
Well, and also all of these questions, and sorry, I'm probably interrupting you here, but aren't these all reasons, like, why if you're giving somebody a whole desktop VM, then like, okay, yeah, it'll be persistent.
Right, and if you're using it to deliver single applications in like what was an RDSH app publishing way, then who cares if I'm not multi-user? Like my hypervisor, so I'm not a multi-user kernel of Windows. But I'm still multi-user at the hypervisor level. Like who cares? It's just like now you're slicing it at this level instead of that level. Like you know what I mean in the stack. Like it's not.
I mean, I guess we just have to see how the density works out.
But we're getting better. Like I said, I mean, the fact that cost-wise, you know, it's within 10, 15, 20% now, and that's going to continue to, go towards zero difference between, you know, like a multi-user OS. And I mean, who knows? Remember Virtuoso and like, you know, now is containers going to change it? Like, is maybe it's going to be one Windows and then our apps are running in containers? Like, I who knows where it's going? So I kind of feel like this whole Windows 10 multi-user, I don't know. I don't know if that's a thing in like 5 years.
That we can, so there's numbers about like VDI only being 10 or 20% more expensive than RDSH. Is that like VMware Research or
that's Brian Madden Custom Research that's made up,
like,
on the spot. I feel like that's talking to people.
Yeah.
And I can say that based on it's now, I'm saying this like anecdotally, but I've talked to enough people that are like, oh yeah, we realized for the cost us per user here for VDI, we can do it. You know, we can do it X. And I'll say it just based on the large numbers of VDI users. That's the one thing I was surprised about when I joined VMware and started talking to customers. Like, a lot of goddamn people are using VDI and using Horizon too. And like 80,000 users, 100,000, 150,000. Like, it's everywhere.
So you sort of, oh, wow. Good for you.
Yeah. Like, I was like, oh, this is actually legit. And I'm like, how is it working? They're like, it's good. Fine.
That's how I feel when I so I've been complaining for like years about some iOS MDM features, and like when I there's a Mobile Pros Slack, which is like dedicated to EMM people, and like when I have these conversations.
Oh, I thought Mobile Pros was like, oh, how I love you, mobile device. Mobile Pro, multiple Mobile Pro people. Okay, I got you.
Okay. Yeah. So sorry, I cut you off there, but it seemed like we're the cost difference coming down. that's going to be an article idea for soon. I'll just listen to this podcast again after it gets published and write down all of the article ideas.
Yeah, good.
Okay, Windows management from the cloud. Let's see. Hopefully this is the year that this becomes real, quote, not real in that everybody's doing it. That's going to take at least 5 years, but real in the sense enough people are doing it that it feels, quote, real.
Now, when you say Windows manager from the cloud, are you talking about modern management or are you talking about something else? Because Microsoft uses those two terms interchangeably, but that's because Microsoft's modern management is Intune, which is from the cloud.
Yeah. No, I'm using those... I'm using those from the cloud and modern management. I'm using those interchangeably. Are there many Workspace ONE customers that are running on-prem AirWatch and using it for modern management?
I don't know about the breakdown. I mean, I don't know about the breakdown like to that level of on-prem versus cloud. I think it's going to be faster in 5 years, though. I just feel
for
like...
For modern management.
Yeah. Because what's happening... You know, here's a migration path. Yeah, Windows 7, you're doing the old way. You migrate to Windows 10, which you're doing the old way. You get all your Windows 10 migrated. Okay, cool. Now you drop in... Maybe you do it now or maybe you do it later. You drop the Workspace ONE agent onto that machine. It runs side by side along with your traditional SCCM and group policy and Active Directory and all that kind of stuff. And even if you don't do anything with it right off the bat, like it can start collecting data for your analytics and intelligence and reporting and all this kind of stuff. And you start doing automations, it's really easy to deploy your Windows patches with that. And you kind of start doing more and more and more. And we have these tools like this thing called Airlift, which can like you connect to your servers, your SCCM servers, and bridges that moves the packages around and your groups and everything. And even if you're not using all that stuff, it just, you drop it on and start just, it's on, but not really using it. And you start kind of slowly moving more and more over to it. I think everyone is talking about Windows 10 modern management. And even if it's not VMware, it's like we spend a lot of time talking about why we believe it's better than like Intune. But even if it's, if VMware is losing, I think Intune is winning. It's not VMware's losing, SCCM is winning. Now there's a lot of side by side like coexistence today, and I think there will be for like probably some years. But I don't think this is a 5 year thing. I think it's like a 2 year, maybe 3 year thing to getting to. And like who knows how long
that was. I feel like we should. I don't know. I'll like bet you a beer or something.
3 year. I'll be dead by then. So it doesn't matter.
We were going to bet something else earlier today.
We were betting on. I think it's a bottle of scotch. I don't remember what the bet was. But yeah, no. I think I'll take that. I mean, say by end of 2019, 2021, so early 2022. I think we're all modern management.
Yeah.
SCCM. I was making the throat slitting. Like Shaggy Scooby Doo style.
So we have that on one side, and like from Ignite, Brad Anderson's tweets was like, don't be the experiments of his ding against you guys. You know what tweet I'm talking about.
I don't. Actually, but I don't read the Twitter that much, to be honest. I check it when I'm bored. Don't be the experiment. Yeah, Microsoft. He publishes all those. He publishes all of those blog posts that show how many users are using SCCM and like how many customers they have, and it's like, do the math. Like, what big enterprises? Or sorry, not SCCM, an Intune. You know. Into like it's not like as long as SCCM exists, as long as Intune is limited in its functionality, like this is the reason why Workspace ONE is so popular with Windows, because like that Citrix to Microsoft model I mentioned, we build on top of, you know, we can do any Windows 32 application, we can do any register key, and
they announced Win32 app deployment at Ignite.
They did announce it. We're shipping it and have been for a long time. And their version is actually this wrapper that wraps a Win32 application into an MSI so you can deploy it with Intune. So Intune is not deploying Win32. It's like this other little tool to do that. And, you know, good luck with that. It's not out yet. you know, so like, I think this is the, like, I think this is the reason, it's like everything, you know, the Intune is very limited in its capability at the enterprise level, which is exactly why SCCM is still a thing. And Brad talks all day long about like, no, SCCM is not going away. It's all kind of course not going away. Cause like, that's the only thing that does it from Microsoft's stack right now. I think as soon as Microsoft gets everything they need into Intune and the cloud-based management, you think SCCM that I have to deploy like in domains on-prem? Oh no, I can do a cloud. Oh yeah, sure. I do a cloud with like, yeah, just build a VM in Azure and use ExpressRoute. I mean, come on, dude. The second Intune has a functionality that's needed, SCCM vanishes like it never existed.
Well, there we there.
This is not Brian VM we're talking. This is Brian, industry guy talking.
Yep. Yeah. Well, so we are at an hour now, but we're on the internet, so we can go as long as we want. So now we're getting to my you know, my favorite session of all the mobility stuff. And I said this before, like the exciting thing about, for me, about having you joining VMware is that suddenly it's your job now to know all about this mobility stuff that I've been telling you how cool it was for the last 7 years. And now that it's your job, you're like, oh, okay, yeah.
Do you want to know something? I haven't told anyone this, but mobility is my weakest area. Especially when you start getting into like, oh, Intune with Office 365 on iOS versus Workspace ONE with Office. And now that like we're really starting to hit the ground running with Workspace ONE to manage Windows 10 physical devices, like that's my comfort zone, because that's like what I started before I got involved in Citrix in the 90s. And so I was doing SMS back in 1995, 96. I was kind of thinking for me as a special, like I was like, you know, because VMware really understands mobility because of AirWatch and everything, and they understand identity and they understand like Horizon and all that kind of stuff. But like, you know, this managing Mac devices and managing Mac is a lot like managing iOS. So I think they really understand that too. Managing Windows devices, I think, is like newer for VMware. And I feel like that's an area where I can excel. So I was actually wondering if I could possibly like focus on that more. I haven't talked to anyone at VMware about this, but I like the idea of focusing on like specifically Windows and what it really needs to manage Windows in a huge distributed enterprise in a modern way, to replace a traditional, you know, PCLM product. So like caveating, you're like, now you have to know mobility. I'm like, not if I have my way.
Well, so then this is going to be a lot like the presentation that I gave in your community session at VMworld, my 10-minute session on like, here's what you have to know about what's going on in mobility right now to sound smart.
Yeah, I just replay that in my head when I'm talking to customers.
Yeah. So I think we can say like because of all this workspace stuff and identity stuff that like device choice, if you decide that you want to give your users choice between, let's just face it, they want to pick a Mac, that's doable. That's like an HR policy decision in 2019. That's not a tech decision.
Yeah, there's still, I don't know if that's going to be there in 2019. I think we're getting there, but there's still a lot of, like, you have to have a product that can manage both. You know what I mean? Like, because you can't have like SCCM and Jamf. Because and like have one or the other, because now they got different capabilities and different teams and different people and different budgets and all this kind of stuff. So you have to have the single platform to be able to go back to that fungibility where the user really can pick whatever they want, and it doesn't matter to IT.
If the user chooses Windows, they have local.
Yeah, like how do you deal with Windows apps? Now yeah, I got a provision of VDI instance, or I got a, you know, like all this kind of stuff. So I think we're getting there, and people are talking about that, but I don't think we're going to see that. I mean, certainly people, I mean, VMware does it, you know, it's people doing it, but I don't think we're going to see that in a big, major way. I don't think that's coming in 19.
Okay.
I want it to, and I'm doing my damnedest to get it out there, but we have to get there.
Well, so this brings up, related to device choice, is the whole BYOD conversation. And the exciting thing is that Android Enterprise, everybody in the industry is super happy with what Android Enterprise has done in the last 3 or 4 years. And the great thing is that, like, for the last couple of years, if you've bought a device, it supported Android Enterprise. It's been required for a couple of years now. So your non-AE devices should be, like, unless you have some kiosks or something, your non-AE devices are you know, pretty much gone in 2019. And
your non-AE?
Android Enterprise. Oh. And Android is essentially only supporting that going forward. And that has, for BYOD, that has the work profile. But overall, as a trend, I'm seeing for, like, corporate office employees, because BYOD for extended enterprise employees, it's always going to be there. Like, we're talking your, like, the example that is easiest to point to is, like, the Uber and Lyft driver. Like, these are employees, they might not have a corporate email address. Like, that type of...
And they're given a phone, right?
No, no.
Oh, they're not given a phone.
No. So, like you go sign up to deliver meals for DoorDash or whatever. Like,
oh, right. It's your own...
It's just an app. And so if you're that enterprise, you have to figure out how to make that app secure and run on the phone. And maybe it's okay. Like, Android actually has some APIs that if you have an app, it can... attest the state of the phone. Even just an app can. iOS, you have to be more roundabout, of course. But for like corporate employees, where BYOD is an option, I see that just getting the state. While Android Enterprise is doing so much good for that, iOS has just stubbornly has refused to budge. There is a preview beta capabilities where it's going to like. Be even one more step for people to install an MDM profile on iOS, and you know, things like they just get like a do not disturb for my managed work accounts.
Oh, I know.
And right. Things like the way that they botched the initial managed contacts. And so I wrote an article a month or two ago called like sometimes it's okay to say no to BYOD and have two phones, and it goes like for users, for personal reasons, and for IT. And I just see for all of these reasons, for the fact that like iOS doesn't handle the privacy separation or like the turning off apps or making sure that your company can't spy on your personal apps, iOS just doesn't handle that nearly as well as Android does. And probably, you know, something like a work profile isn't exactly the style that Apple is going to. And I just see like I'm riding the bus, you know, into the office in the morning, the number of people with two phones, and especially it's like two high end, like two iPhone 10s.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, I think I'm seeing that a lot also. First of all, because some people, if you're a big company, you're developing your own applications, you simply just don't even want to develop for two platforms. Be like, no, it's our company. We're making Android apps.
Yeah.
Get an Android.
Yeah.
And I think Android, you have to think, you also have that COPE option, that corporate owned, personally enabled, which the experience for that is like, really, like it's your own phone. It's like you come to the office on day one, they give you a phone, you put your own phone number on it, you can have your own app so the company can't see, and like all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like a BYO experience, but it's just all employees have the same phone. And so it's like, hey, if you want to use this phone as your only phone, go for it. If you want to keep your old phone and have two, that's fine too. But to companies, I think they're just like, yeah, we just can't deal with.
And Android is better at handling that.
Exactly.
And this is, we're talking about like a narrow range. We're talking about a fairly narrow range of employees anyway, because they're employees that are like in the corporate system where they would want to be accessing sensitive data, but not data that's so sensitive that the company just has to be like, screw it. Here's the phone that's completely locked down. So in the grand scheme of all like 200 million adults in the US workforce, this is like 30 or 40 million of them.
And I feel like Android is kind of winning the enterprise like that, but iPhone still seems to be, at least to me, like iPhone is more common like on the street. So I think that's how you end up with a lot of multi device users. you know, because the company's like, F it, we're just giving everyone Android. You can use it as your own or not. And I'm like, ah, I've got 12 years of buying content on iTunes.
But I see even people with companies like, okay, you can have your company phone and you can get... you can get like whatever last year's iPhone model is, or you can get one of two or three different Androids. And so if the user has a personal iPhone, what do you want your work phone to be? You want it to be an iPhone 2 as well. And or if you're an Android person, you want your work phone to be Android. So I see that a lot. And of course I'm here in the Bay Area where like this is not like the rest of the world, and you live in New York City.
Yeah.
Let's call up Gabe and see what the BYOD trends are in Omaha.
It's a good question. I honestly can't. Yeah.
But so I have this like residual grumpiness that I've had for, I don't know, 2 years or like since Android Enterprise started really being fully formed. I've had this residual grumpiness about the state of iOS and BYOD.
Yeah. And I didn't pay much attention to that really. But now it seems, and maybe it's because I'm paying attention to mobile more now that I'm at VMware, but it definitely seems like Android's even pulling away like more so than they were in the past.
Yeah. So that has implications for like mobile threat defense and like the long tail of EMM adoption. Like at your 1,000-person company that's just buying, you know, that maybe they're just an Intune customer. Like there, they can probably get a lot of usage out of. Like, you know what? It is just a lot easier to maybe if we enroll our people's phones just that we can set up their email and Wi-Fi. Yeah. I don't know how much. So here in our San Francisco office that I work in, we have about 25 people and one IT admin. And do you know how much of his time that he spends with people walking up to him like, hey, can you get my Wi-Fi on this phone or can you help me set up my email? And then every time the passwords reset, which that happens every 90 days.
Free MDM tools that, or simply MDM, what's that called? Didn't you write about this?
Yeah. Like there's so many, yeah.
There's only like 10 cents a month. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Like it's like he would pay a dollar out of his pocket.
Oh, right.
Every month for.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Anyway.
So then there's, no set of yearly predictions would be complete without mentioning IoT, edge computing, digital assistants, voice-based interfaces, augmented reality, virtual reality, and kind of a lot of these things are the one of the ways that I look at these things is we see like, okay, BYOD, iPhones and iPads, and along with them like Gmail and Dropbox. In 2010 and 2011, we were like, holy shit, this is a huge security risk. People are going to FUIT and all that. And we're like, what do we even do about this stuff? So naturally, it's like, okay, we're going to be prepared for the next trend that comes along. And what's everyone talking about? Like Amazon Alexa everywhere and VR and AR everywhere. And so the question that I've been asking for a few years, like, is this going to be the next, like, oh, crap, catching us off moment? Off guard moment for IT, and so far the answer has been no.
Yeah, I agree with that because I am. I'm bullish on voice as a concept because you know that's how humans talk to each other, But these devices like Alexa today are like way too simple because you have to specifically work your way through a workflow. Like I always give the example, like when I'm a tech target, I can be like, hey, Jack, what time do I have to leave? And you say 10 minutes. Okay. So, you know, like who I am, you're authenticated that I believe who I am. You know, like you can parse the language, know what that means, which of course Alexa can do that today, fine. But now you know, like what I'm talking about, you know, the calendar, you know, where the location is, you know, what traffic is, you know, how early we have to get there, you know, if we have to park, you have to know, like, there's so much stuff you have to know.
Like integrating all these data sources is going to be
Yeah.
When does integrating a million different once we get all things integrated to do that, well, half our data is going to be in other new apps that...
Well, or
it's always going to lag behind.
This is where, I really like what... I think one of the greatest gems of what's happening in VMware right now within our EUC group is this thing called Mobile Flows, which I feel like it's a shipping feature of Workspace ONE. It's just starting to scratch the surface. And I think Mobile Flows is kind of a silly name, but it basically, you have this like Mobile Flows service on the back end, and you write these connectors that hook into like Concur and your email and like Salesforce. And
it's kind of similar to what Citrix just acquired with Sappho.
Oh yeah, exactly. It seems like Sappho is a little bit more robust, but VMware is very clear to write like we have this too with Mobile Flows.
But my question is,
what it doesn't say is and I think it has to roll into like evolve into like full on like microservices. It can like collect this data and reparse it, and I don't know. I think like you need like every application kind of hooked together in a smart way somehow magically before and then by the way the Alexa, then it's like I have intelligent context around like whether I'm typing what time do we leave into a chat bot or whether I'm asking a robot Alexa what time do we leave. Like, it doesn't matter whether the interface is voice. That's just a form factor. It matters because I can type it, I can email, I can text, I can talk to, I can sign language, whatever. It's the hard part is not the medium, which is voice versus text. The hard part is like the whole context of like making the answers valuable.
Well, but there's another, the context is a big issue, and that's, yeah, I can't wait for Siri to be like I'm returning my zip car, and so I need to go into the zip car app to know the address of the garage that it's going to, and then I need to go into the other app, and like when I need to do something in like four different apps, and I want Siri to be able to do all of it. Like,
yeah,
like you can see that. Okay, that's all doable. But the question is, so Benedict Evans, the Andreessen Horowitz analyst, has written about voice. And one of the problems that he writes, like, okay, so obviously if it's an agent that knows like everything, then it'll work just like we expect it to. But we don't know. And if it's like a very narrow domain, like we know what we can expect to work. But in that whole middle range, there's the whole issue of what questions can this voice agent ask and what can't it. And like with an app, like we can see what things we can do with an app because there's a button right there for the function.
Oh,
but with
yeah.
a voice agent, it's like half the time you're experimenting to even know, to discover whether or not the task that you want to do with the app is possible with a voice.
Or am I just saying it the wrong way?
Yeah. And well, the saying it the wrong way part can be taken care of. But like does this digital assistant integrate with like the all of my different apps that I have?
Well, and now
and what
and do you want? Like, do I want some app like hoovering up everything I have?
I think Facebook does.
Yeah, but I mean, it gets crazier though, right? Because like, look at Facebook, and then also add it into like, Facebook doesn't have like your calendar yet. I don't know. I don't use Facebook, But like,
I bet it does. Well, yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? You have to know like in order to make AI that's smart enough, I have to give it like fucking everything about me, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and open two different apps to figure out how to return a zip car.
Yeah. And so I just see the use cases for voice-based interactions. Like, sure, if I'm walking, like sending a text by dictating or voice is great. But like an Alexa is fun because you can go to a conference and they'll give you one for free as part of a booth giveaway.
Well, so let me say,
but like To me, there's no, I just don't see any killer use cases that are gonna.
This is going back to where I say the problem is the data, like collection and and context, not the UI. So, for example, we use Concur for travel, and God help you if you got to change a trip and you're using that fucking website and the 97,000 little things. And I kind of like found like a life hack or whatever, where one time I had to work with someone on the phone and sent me an email. Like that email address was a generic address, and I can just like send emails back to them to that address, and like they do shit for me. So
it's like someone in the travel department at VMware.
No, it's like it's Amex Travel, right? But it's like whatever. It's like some weird long thing, like Team VMware, Amex, blah blah blah. Like,
so you can be like, change my hotel and my flight.
So I just say like, so I'll just email them and be right there and be like, hey, I need to leave on this flight instead on my trip on Thursday, and I want this Hilton, like, you know, that night when I get there, and set up an Avis. And I'm not talking to them because I don't want to like dial and wait on the phone. I'm typing it. So like the UI in this case is a typing versus a talking, but the value that they provide is they're doing 17 different things for me that I would have to do manually via our other apps to do it. So that's delightful, but it's not because I'm talking to it. Like, I don't give a shit about talking. Like, sometimes your hands are full, it makes sense to talk. Sometimes if I got a device in front of me and I can type, it makes sense to type. So I think that the technology that enables all this to happen will equally enable talking and like chat body type things. But like I said, the UI is not the hard, like the talking interface, like Alexa can understand us now. That's not the hard part. The hard part is tying all stuff to the back end together, because again, like Concur is a very simple problem domain. It's only
and that's bringing the way that you're thinking about it around to the way that I'm thinking about it. It's like, okay, like that Concur is that's like one domain.
Yeah, and it's got like 17 micro apps in it, like the car, the hotel, the passport services, the identification, the airplanes, the trains, you know, whatever. But it's still all around travel.
But my thing is, so
and they have connectors built, quote unquote, into all that already.
Yeah. So maybe that agent on the other end of the email address like does get replaced with integrations, and
maybe it's not even a human. I don't know.
Yeah,
could be a robot right now.
Yeah, or Mechanical Turk, or whatever. And
but I don't care.
That's still a narrow domain, and somebody has to build that. So if you have Sappho, or if you have Mobile Flows,
VMware Workspace ONE Mobile Flows,
you have to think like, okay, you have to identify the problem and like a problem that's enough to want to do something about it, and then you have to build it, and then you have to integrate it. So like these do like point app solutions, but to me they're like an app by app thing. And even the one other anecdote that I'll mention is, so like Siri has these workflow capabilities. I think even the app that Apple acquired was called Workflow, and they built it into Siri, and that came out with iOS 12. And Aaron Freimark from Ground Control was on the podcast a while ago, and he said like he built this thing because like where he lives in New York, like he might fly out of any one of five different airports. He lives upstate a little bit, so like you have to compute like the traffic time and
oh wow.
So for him, it was like how to set what time to set his alarm based on his flight and the airport. And so like he wrote all this, but also he's also the guy that like made Ground Control software.
yeah, that guy does it, we don't.
Yeah.
But you know, this brings a good point, because I'm not sure how generic a lot of the stuff can be. Like there's easy generic ones, like some of the little Mickey Mouse examples we talked about, but I think that for something like a Mobile Flows or a Sappho. Is Sapphos or Sappho? Sappho?
Sappho.
For something like that to be usable in a large way in the enterprise, it's going to be customized for every single... And it's not just hooking up. Like it's not just hooking up. Like, oh, I hooked up Concur to Salesforce to travel to... Like, it's not just that. It's like walking your way through the workflows of what users might want to do.
And everybody's going to have some custom options that they need, like their field that has been in their ERP system for 20 years.
Like I know I have FlyClear. I have Clear, and I also have PreCheck.
So somebody has to build into you so that your agent knows.
Yeah.
Also looks up with Clear to see whether or not the airport has Clear.
And to check and see but PreCheck, is still kind of random. Every once in a while you don't have it. So check on my actual boarding pass and see if I have it on that flight.
Or you're flying to a country and an airline where it doesn't have it.
Right. Yeah. And so you have the same thing. And it's the same kind of thing. Look at how long it took Waze to or Apple Map, whichever one does it now. They ask you how many people are in the car. So they can tell you, should we be traffic routing you based on HOV lanes or not?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's cool. I thought you were going to mention about Apple Maps, and I have some anecdotes about Apple Maps not knowing where some places were from my Thanksgiving trip.
Did not know where Microsoft was, did not know where VMware was, did not know where Amazon was.
Well, listen, so we're at over an hour 20 now, so... hopefully
all right, we'll just do this next time I'm in town. This is fun.
Yeah,
I hope I don't get fired over after this, but
thinking back, everything should be,
I'm kind of punchy because I woke up, I just flew in today from the East Coast, and I was had a 4:30 no a 3:30 wake up call, so that's midnight 30 here, and it's 5 o'clock now, so I've been awake a very long time.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is always fun, and can't wait until the next time.
Yeah. Thanks for the invitation, and we'll do it again.
And thank you for everybody listening.